Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. We're going to talk today about company growing pains and considerations. I don't know if we're going to spend more time on the pains or on the considerations, but we're going to talk about growing and some of the problems that come with that. You know, there is a problem in business, and I've been there, when you don't have enough business. That's a problem. There's no question about the fact that's a problem. That's when you don't pay your bills, when the money's not coming in, when you're staying awake at night, things of that sort. But you know what? If you are growing, that's another set of problems. Now, we often laugh at our company. We prefer those problems. But nonetheless, they are problems. And believe it or not, as we've talked on the program here before, those kind of problems can actually put you out of business. It's amazing how many people experience huge growth and end up going out of business by being unable to handle the growth that they had. And that's for a variety of reasons. We want to talk about that a little bit today. We talked on the program here a few weeks ago about the idea of perhaps growth, instead of being an assumption, should be a decision. You should decide to grow. You know, if you have an opportunity to grow your company, I'm very aggressive about that, as are probably most entrepreneurs. And, you know, the idea is we grab at those growth opportunities, sometimes without really thinking what that means. And here's what it can mean. It can mean that the lifestyle business that you're accustomed to and really like is going to change into something entirely different, and you're not going to like it. Well, you wouldn't be the first person that wrote a small business into a large business and suddenly found that you don't really like running a large business. And not only do you not like it, you're not very good at it. And it begins to have problems as a result of that. You wouldn't be the first person to find that out. On the other hand, staying the same size is difficult as well. And not growing it presents its own problems, and we'll talk about those as the day goes on. I'm going to start off today talking to you about an article that's written by a guy that's, you may think, finds an unusual article for a business growth. His name is Tim Keller. He's a pastor. And he wrote a really great article on the process of church growth. Now, you may think, I'm not a church, I'm a business. Well, actually, in my opinion, having being and not being a minister, but being very involved in church leadership type activities, in many ways, I think church leadership requirements are actually a lot harder than they are in business. Number one, you're generally dealing with volunteers, and therefore they can you're not paying them, so they have a lot easier time not doing it. It presents its own very special set of problems, such as, for instance, how do you measure growth? You'll think about that in a minute. Just getting bigger isn't necessarily correct. In business, it's pretty simple. We measure growth by revenue, as a rule. And if revenue is growing, we say we're growing. Well, in a church, it's not quite so. When you have in any nonprofit, for that matter, think like, as Jim Collins talked about, an orchestra. What is success for an orchestra? Is it playing good music? Well, who says that? And so those are the kinds of problems sometimes you run into in a volunteer or a nonprofit type operation. But again, in business, it's a little more cut and dried, isn't it? When we look at growth, we look at revenues. However, I do find some of the concepts that thinkers in the nonprofit, in this particular instance, in the church world, have to say about growth apply very well to business, although you have to twist them a little bit. One of the things is that a small business, and you know, you can make your own definition up of that, and small business is a very nebulous term. If you go by the Small Business Administration, you can find some huge companies that are listed as small businesses, but it doesn't do that. But here's something you can absolutely figure out. A larger business is not simply a larger version of a smaller business. Now, I'm taking it directly from Tim Keller, who's using it to talk about churches and how to lead churches. What he says basically is that a larger church is not just a bigger version of a smaller church. There's a lot of differences that take place. Those are differences in communication, in decision making. In fact, those differences are so great that the leadership skills required in the different leadership styles in running, let's say, a one-man show, and you grow that into a significant medium-sized operation, the leadership styles are so different. It's almost on an order of magnitude. It's a completely different order. So how do you do that? Well, first place, every business, including yours, has a culture. We did a show about that. The idea that business cultures matter. And if you're running a business and you want to have a good culture in your business, and I hope you do, well, then you need to, we went through in a program here about the idea you've got to spend some time and put a little energy into that. And don't just expect it to happen. But every business, there is a certain culture that sort of fits in with a small business. You know, a small business where you got, let's say, two employees or three employees, maybe two. You've got the founder, a sales guy, or a service guy, or something like that, and perhaps somebody answer the phones and sort of do the bookkeeping there. And you all know each other real well. You know that you don't really have to do memos and things like that because you see each other all the time. So you know if there's something to be communicated, you just say, "Hey, everybody, listen up," and you say it. And you know if somebody's not going to be there on Thursday, it's very clear they're not going to be there. If you're going to schedule a meeting on Thursday and you need everybody there, she says, "Oh, no, I can't be there Thursday. Let's do that," or "I can't be there Thursday morning. Let's do that Thursday afternoon." Okay, and this very informal type communication can take place, and it's very, very effective. I'm not knocking it. It's very, very effective. But let's say you grow to 20 or 30 employees who are not all in there at the same time, and you try to use that same method of communication where you're just going to stand in the middle of the floor and say, "Hey, everybody, we're going to have a meeting next Thursday afternoon." Well, I'll assure you, half the people in your company are not going to realize you're having a meeting next Thursday afternoon. And besides the fact, scheduling is going to get very difficult because you're going to have people come back and say, "Hey, I've got a customer meeting that afternoon," or, "Hey, I plan to be off that day," or, "You know, I've got other things to do that day." And all of a sudden, it becomes a little more complicated planning. So you've got to formalize those things. And let's suppose you grow from a company of being even 20 people to a couple of hundred, as people have. Well, all of a sudden, you're in a whole different paradigm of communication. And you've got to get a lot more formalized in how you do it and how you get buy-in for those things, which is why we say that a larger business is not just a bigger version of a small business. It takes a lot of difference. So again, those are part of the problems when you're growing a business. You've got to take those into consideration that you're getting that done. You know, your people sort of have to accept the cultural size of your company. Now there's a converse thing here that takes place. Companies that get very large, just take like somebody like a General Electric, these very large, multinational, successful companies like that. You know, if you talk to their the more thoughtful leaders that are in that business and that are perhaps running divisions of those companies, because that's who you generally will get a chance to talk to occasionally, or perhaps even a branch of that company. What they will be trying to do most of the time is recapture a bit of the small business mentality where they all know what's going on and they all communicate and customers' needs are being served very well, and where they know their customers and everybody's on board with the vision of what they've got. They strive hard to do that, but that is very hard in a large company. It requires a lot of discipline. It requires strategic and intelligent leadership, which is why the CEOs of these companies make so much money, that they're trying to put systems like that in place as you start to do it. But, you know, to try and impose a size culture on your business that does not fit your business is a recipe for disaster. If you go back to almost, you only got the two or three employees, and you want to go sit in your office and write memos to them, long memos and long policy statements and things of that sort, and give it to them, where you're going to look silly. And what's going to happen is the few people you have that are working there are not going to want to stay there. Again, as we already mentioned, on the flip side of that is to not do anything formal and just sort of chit chat around the water cooler if you have a water cooler, and say here's what our vision is, what we're going to do, and think that's actually going to sink in anywhere is a big mistake. So we have to sort of, as we begin to grow in a business, we sort of have to adjust our methods and our methodology for what we want to do. Otherwise, what will happen is you're bigger. Your larger company will actually shrink back down to your smaller company because of you not taking place with that. You know, there is an increasing complexity. The larger the business, the less your employees will have in common in that business. You know, when you first do start a business, you may hire people, even people you know perhaps, and you know, you're starting it and you get somebody you go to church with, or you play tennis with, or something like that, to work with you, and you all know each other. You may know each other's families, and you sort of learn real quickly everybody's little idiosyncrasies, and you may not like them all, but you do learn how to handle them, and so you're able to do that. But as you get to be a larger company, and as a company begins to grow, all of a sudden that doesn't work anymore. And all of a sudden you're talking with people that are of a completely different culture than you are. And suddenly, you know, the joke, the sort of jovial way you were dealing with somebody, with someone else, takes offense at that. And again, those are just things you've got to deal with. There's an increasing amount of complexity as you grow into that. You've got to get to be more intentional about things you're doing. And perhaps even as a leader of that company, you start to feel more of a mentor's role, whereas instead of doing everything yourself, you have to do it. You know, when we first started our business, it was my wife and I. We're doing it off of out of a kitchen, really, in a basement, and you know, it was just her and I. So whatever we did was whatever we thought about something was what the company thought about it. And so communicating, you know, between a husband and wife, although there's a lot of jokes made about that, the fact of the matter is you do communicate pretty well. So everything ran pretty smoothly in that regard. But once you add any outside employee, and then you move out of the house, you move into to a facility that you're renting probably, and you begin to get more people. All of a sudden, you're dealing with problems that you didn't deal with before. And all of a sudden, instead of me just being worried about taking care of customers, which is what I did, just take care of customers all the time. All of a sudden, now I have to not just take care of customers, I have to take care of employees. And if I didn't always do that good of a job with that. And so an employee would come to me with a problem, and it was like, hey, we're in the middle of a sort of a crisis with a customer here. I can't be bothered with your problem. But the fact of the matter is, that guy's problem is pretty important because it's important to him. He's working for me. He's representing our company out there. So therefore, it's important to us. Those are the kinds of things you have to learn how to do. As the company grows, some of us sort of do that naturally. Some of us don't. By the way, you're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We are being live streamed right now on biz1190.com all over the world. Also, today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. Back in just a minute. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. We're talking about growing pains and considerations. I said in the last segment, I sort of ended up talking about the idea that as you grow, communications has to change quite a bit. You know, it's just human nature. If people feel left out, and let's say you're even not a really large company, your company has grown to 10 or 12 people. But you grew from one or two, and perhaps as the one or two, it could even be you were co-founders, and you'd sit down, you guys would sit down and talk about the vision of your company and visualize about it and you know, strategize about how you're going to do this, that, and the other, and do all these things, and that was great. And you then a few other people come in, and perhaps in the beginning, they're sort of in these discussions too, but as you get a little bigger, you sort of find yourself just almost inadvertently leaving people out of those conversations. Well, let me tell you something. People don't like being left out of things. Now, there may be things they'll understand. There are confidential things. Perhaps you're discussing employee pay or something like that, and they will understand you need to go and perhaps close the door and have a private discussion about that. But here's what you've got to be sure of, is that the vision that you have for the company and where you see the company going, and the market that you see the company serving, and what you think is important, your best sales proposition. When you come to a customer, what makes you unique? What's your sales proposition? Don't assume everybody just gets that by osmosis. They don't. So as you get larger, you're going to have a formalized method. And by formal, I don't mean you got to have some giant meetings somewhere, or you got to issue 1,000 memos a day or anything. But you do need at least some way of being certain that everyone knows what you're about. You know, one of the ways that we kind of do is that our company to be sure we're staying on top of this is we will occasionally, just in like a lunch meeting or something, we'll just ask folks, say, okay, what is our, I don't use the term sales proposition much, but I'll say, what is it that, why do people use us in lieu of our competition? Why do you think that's so? And it's interesting, number one, it's good feedback because you need to be sure that they may be hearing things out there you're not hearing. And so number one, you need to hear that. You can't just, this is not an autocratic, totally top-down thing where you just sort of, you know, tell the news from on high and everybody gets in line. That's not what I'm talking about, but it was a discussion. But it does let you know whether your vision's sinking in. You know, in our, we try to be the best electronic motor drive company in the country. We try to have say that no one anywhere is better at drives than we are, and we pride ourselves on our customer service. So if I hear anything other than, well, they use us because we're our location or something like that, number one, I don't think that's true, but I may be interested in hearing why they think that. But so far, those things have not really panned out. But you know, we want people to understand they work for us, particularly new employees, that customers use us and why they use us. And our research has been they use us because we have very good customer service. We're held to high customer service standards. And consequently, we want all our employees to be sure that we enforce those high standards of quality and customer service, because that's why people use us instead of our competitors, which are mainly very large companies. Well, it's important you communicate that. Don't assume people just pick that up as they're coming on. And let me tell you, being redundant about it is never bad. I know, you know, a lot of us, we have the idea, you may have, if you've had children, you certainly know this is true. You know, a lot of us think because we said it once or we wrote a memo on it that somehow that's all that's necessary, that's like etched into stone in someone's mind or something. Let me just clue you in, it's not. People don't hear half of what you say. They don't read half of what you give them. That may be embarrassing, but this is how it is. And so you have to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. And not only do you have to repeat it, you have to model it in front of them. That you model the fact that customer service matters right here. We care what customers think. We take action when we see that our customer service is not up to what it should be. And those are the kinds of things you need to be sure that your people understand. That may have been your vision. And it was a great vision, and you did a good job with it. But now you've grown, and you have other people. You need that to become their vision, not just your vision, their vision. And that's where the role of the founder changes as the company grows. And a lot of people find that very, very difficult to do that. And what you're going to find is the larger your company becomes, which in some cases the more successful you are, the larger your company becomes, the harder it is to make those kinds of things happen. So you have to really be intentional about it. You have to absolutely be intentional about that. You have to, as you begin to grow, you have to be sure that you are staying on top of your customers. I've already said that already, but you know, there's a little bit of difference in saying we do good customer service and, in fact, being able to do it. You know, again, as your company grows, when you're a small company, there's only two or three of you there. Everybody in your company, probably all three of you, feel a real burning obligation to be sure that the customer gets served. Well, human nature being what it is, as companies begin to grow and the larger that you become, the easier it will be to fall into this trap. The larger, the easier it is for someone to feel less responsibility for that and say, well, you know, so-and-so is going to take care of that. That's not my job. I really hate anybody ever saying that. In fact, most of our employees wouldn't say it to me. But the idea, and I don't like to think that in any organization I'm part of, oh, that's not my job to be sure it's done right. Well, it is my job to be sure that it's done right. And if you're working in our organization and it's a customer service issue, it is your job to make sure somebody knows about that. And we get it handled because it affects all of us. Because, you know, as we always say, customers can fire every one of us, and we don't know what's happening. So we have to deal with it. But the larger you get, the easier it is to do that. You know, John Maxwell talks about a thing called Big Mo, which is motivation. And Big Mo is nothing more than having a relationship. And so much of business is relationships. The older I get, the more I begin to figure that out. That more than strategies, more than brilliant marketing schemes, more than anything, a lot of success in life depends on relationships. And those relationships are with your employees. They're with your vendors. It's very important to have relationships with your vendors and certainly with your customers. And, you know, as you get larger, it may not be that you have a personal relationship with a customer, but it may be that your company does through an individual, and you need to absolutely encourage that. Encourage it. And be sure, because here's what Maxwell talks about with Big Mo, motivation. Momentum, not motivation, momentum. Big Mo, momentum. You know, if you've, he uses the example of, if you've got a railroad, big locomotive chugging on down the track here, and you put a rock on the track in front of that locomotive chugging on, it's going to crush the rock and move right along and not have a problem. But if the locomotive is stopped and you put a rock in front of the locomotive, it may not be able to start. Now, business is like that. You know, if you've had a customer with whom you've had a good relationship and you've done a great job all these years and you have a good relationship with them, and a little problem pops up, it will remain probably a little problem, especially if you jump right on it and take care of it. But if you have no relationship with that customer, if you've not nurtured a relationship with that customer and a problem pops up, that can absolutely be a deal killer. They can leave you and go to their competition. You can think about that even in your own personal life. You know, if you've gone to a restaurant a lot of times and you've always had great service in that restaurant and great food, and you go there and this one time the food's not exactly fixed the way you like it. Now, depending on your personality, you may complain about it. You may not. But here's what you probably will do. If you've been there a number of times and it has been very satisfactory, you probably will not say, well, I'm never coming here again because they have terrible food. Because you know they don't. This is an anomaly. This is different. And your customers view you that way. If they've had a relationship with you and a good experience with you, and then you have a bad experience with them, they'll view it as an anomaly, especially if you jump right on it and make sure they understand that that you care about this, that you're going to take care of it. And that's what he talks about, the big mo. That's momentum that keeps you going with a customer. Well, as you begin to grow, keeping those kind of relationships becomes very, very important. And especially as it moves away from you doing it personally and you're having to have other people that work for you to do it, you got to be sure that you are very, very intentionally communicating that vision. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Let me remind you again, we're streaming live on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com, where you'll also find blogs and other materials relate to the program and to the business of business. So go there and check us out. You know, another thing, we're talking about business growth. We're talking about business, the growth pains and considerations. And I don't want to overemphasize the pain part of it, because I would much rather be growing than not growing. But nonetheless, growing does in fact present problems, and you should anticipate those and know how to deal with them. Again, if I get to choose a problem between the problem of growth, problems associated with growth, and problems associated with not having enough business, I will take the ones associated with growth every time. But nonetheless, you still have got to know that you've got, that you have, that it's going to be growth issues there. You know, one of the things that can happen to you is change can begin to happen to your company. Do you know that your company is going to change? We live in such a rapid era of change, and we've talked about this on the program many times. It's not a matter of if you're going to change. Here's what it's a matter of. If you're going to control those changes yourself, or if you're going to have them forced on you by the market. You know, we've used an example here before, the idea that you know, if you're a company making, that's made a living making slide rules in the past, well, you're going to have to make a change there, or you're not going to be selling, you're not going to be in business too long. You're going to have to come up with something else you know how to do, serving that same market, and basically readjust your market. Now, no one likes change. No one really likes it. We all fight it back. I'm going to talk in one of the other segments here about the idea of some people seem to suffer from a form of temporary insanity where they just keep doing the same things even when they don't work. Well, don't fall into that trap. but we may have to change. The deal is, can you change in a sensible fashion? As you begin to see your market change, do you pay attention to it? Do you know what's happening out there? Well, you should. And you have to change. You may have to change your focus. Now, I've said many times that the business plan that I started our company with back in 1988 is not a business plan that I would invest a nickel in today for anyone to start a business. And that's because the business that we started doing, our primary business, doesn't really exist as a business anymore because of technology changes. And many of you are employed in businesses that didn't exist a few years ago. And if you were still doing what you had perhaps started your career doing, you might not have a job anymore because those kinds of things don't exist. We do a lot of work in a fairly good sized steel mill. My family grew up in the steel business, and I'm sometimes amazed to see this. You know, steel mills used to employ thousands and thousands and thousands of employees. Some of them just moving materials around and putting stuff on and off of conveyors and things of that sort. Well, that's almost all automated now. And now if you go to this particular steel mill I'm thinking about, they have a guy sitting there in what looks like, with all these monitors in front of him and has a bunch of joysticks and buttons and things, and he looks like he's in the captain's chair of the Starship Enterprise on Star Trek or something. That's what it sort of looks like. And he's literally running the entire plant from there because it's almost an automated process, and he just tweaks a joystick a little bit once in a while or initiates programs to do this, that, and the other, and sort of watches over the whole plant on his monitors there. And you know, the guys that had no more skills than to sit there and empty coal into a furnace or something like that, those people don't have jobs doing that anymore because that's all done by machine now. And so your business is no different than that. You've got to be able to adapt your business to what the real life world is. Very few of us get to influence in a meaningful way the market that we're part of, at least in terms of technology. I mean, technology is going to happen whether you are part of it or not. You're not going to stop it. There are some incredible entrepreneurial people that have made big changes. I mean, you can't get around that. I think of a guy like Steve Jobs. I mean, who knew we wanted cameras in our phones until he came along and made them? So he was sort of a driver of technology, and you may be a driver of technology yourself, but what you can't do is sit back and think technology is going to stop and somehow give you a pass while it runs past everybody and everyone else. And you can sit around and whine about that and think, oh, we long for the good old days, but you can also go broke doing that. So that as the business begins to expand and the times change and your business is growing, you have to grow with it. You've got to pick up and grow with it. One of the things you got to learn how to do is, when you first started your business, depending on what your business is, if you're a technical type business like me, or perhaps you were a services business, or perhaps you were the main sales guy selling whatever product you sold, and you swapped it over and you began to use your particular expertise to found a company, whatever that expertise is. You were it. And probably you built your initial business on that expertise. It was on your expertise, on your skills, whether they were sales skills or technical skills or whatever they were. That's what you built the business on. But as the business begins to grow and you begin to add people into the business, what becomes much more important than your technical skills or even your sales skills becomes your leadership skills. And a lot of us, this may be a bit humbling to figure out sometimes, is a lot of us lack in that area a little bit. And one of the real problems is a lot of us don't know we lack in that area. And a lot of us, I'll include myself in this, we've had to learn the hard way that we have failings in leadership. And the hard way in business generally means it costs you a lot of money. Isn't that what that means most of the time? When things go bad in business, they cost you money. That is one thing I do like about business versus, let's say, a nonprofit like a church or any other type nonprofit, is the feedback in business is often much easier to understand. You know, if your business is not doing well, no one has to tell you that. You figure that out pretty quick. Now, we often say you should have seen it coming, and yeah, you should have. But there's no question about the fact when it gets there, what's going on, and it's easy. It's things that we do have to figure that out. You know, we have to begin to emphasize and figure out, you know, what our strengths are. If you, it's so easy, particularly when you're a small company, and you can get away with this as a small company. You know, if you're a one man show or a one or two man show, you know, you can flit around here and there and pick up this business and pick up that business, and they're totally unrelated businesses and different markets and everything else, and you can kind of meander yourself around in that and make a living out of it. That gets a little bit harder as your business gets bigger, because all of a sudden you find that you know, if you're having to spend a significant amount of time chasing business that's not very profitable, and a lot of times we may have an emotional attachment to that business because that's sort of how we started ours, you know, dealing with that little segment of the market over there, not figuring out that segment of the market has now matured and gone to where it's really not very profitable for us anymore. But we spend time over there chasing that business. Well, we've got to learn to do that. We've got to learn to focus. We had to do that in our company several times. We've had to do this a number of times when we found out that a segment of our business, and one of them in particular, and I don't want to dig too much into our business here, but a particular segment of our business that at that time was the largest part of our business, we began to see that was dying. It was dropping off. The profit margins in that business were dropping off. And as we began to sit around and brainstorm about that, we came to the realization that if we sort of graphed that out to the future and sort of looked at it, that it was not a very pleasant future. And so what we did was we said, okay, we're not going to just chop that off and not do business with it anymore, but we are going to quit emphasizing that business, and we're going to go after another market we see over here that's a little better market. And we did, and it worked out very well for us. And as we predicted, that part of the business that we left, that category of business that we left, continued to decline and is doing pretty much nothing now. And some of my cohorts that have similar businesses to me that didn't do that went out of business as a result of that. So, you know, we ducked that by watching that coming. That's what you need to do as your business grows and changes, is to watch and focus. And the larger you are, the more important that is, because, you know, it's not just you. Maybe you could turn yourself around on a dime and go home and read something that really pushes your energy level up, and you can go out and on your own really make a big change. But let's say you're trying to bring 100 people with you and do that. Well, all of a sudden, that's not so easy, because those 100 people are not where you are. So then the leadership skills become rather important as you begin to sit down and talk with them. And any of you that have been in business at any length of time at all, or have any employees, you know, I know the idea was, well, they have to do what you say because you're the boss. Well, we all know that may be true at one level, but generally speaking, it's not true, because if you have talented people working for you and you start treating them like that, the talented ones at least are going to leave you, and you're going to be left with the people that are not talented, and so your company is going to suffer as a result of that. So you have to begin to emphasize your strengths and see what you get in regard to that. You know, how do you attract new business into your company? As you begin to grow, you know, and you know, there's two ways to do that, as we talk, as you're growing as a business and you see things begin to grow, and you're probably growing with your existing customers, right, as most of us do. And then you have to come up with the idea, okay, is my future growth continuing to expand with these few customers I've got now, or do I need new customers? Or conversely, perhaps you've grown completely by new accounts all the time, and all of a sudden you begin to realize, I'm looking at my existing customer base and I need to be getting more out of the base that I've got. Those are the kind of decisions and things you have to think about as you begin to grow. And the whole point of this is those are decisions to make. I don't know, they're problems or more considerations, aren't they? The idea of that, as people begin to view your company in a certain way, they begin to view your brand in a certain way. And you know, whether you know it or not, you do have a brand. It can be a good one or a bad one, but you do have a brand. And I would encourage you to think of almost any company you can think of. If I name Comcast to you, well, they've got a brand. You may like them, you may not like them. They've got a brand. If I could say UPS to you, you may like them, you may not like them, but they've got a brand. And something comes to mind. Coca-Cola, part of the most recognized brand in the world, I would think, by this time. Google, Apple, things like that. They all have a brand. And your company does too. Most of us on a much smaller scale than that, but nonetheless, a brand. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. I'm going to talk a little bit about, we're sort of about to run out of time here. I want to get to, there was a really nice article by a guy named Stacy Karakostas. And the title of his article was Why Change is Necessary for Small Businesses to Grow. And I want to spend a minute here because I thought it was a very good article. And I'm going to give you a direct quote from him right at the beginning here. It says, is temporary insanity keeping you from growing your small business? Most people are afraid to change how they do things in their business. They are comfortable with the way things are and don't believe change will help their business grow. But successful people recognize when things aren't working and aren't afraid to make changes. That's because successful people and successful businesses recognize the need for change early, and they embrace it, and they look for it. And because of this, they're also pretty quick to see when something isn't working. The idea of insanity is to keep doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. And it's amazing how many people do that. It's, our sales are really down, so we need whatever method we're using for sales. So let's all work harder and keep doing the same thing. Well, sometimes that's just insane. If it's not working, perhaps you need to back up and say, why isn't this working? Is it that we're not working hard at it? Or just suppose everybody is working hard and it's not working. Well, at that point, then you say, we're doing the wrong thing and we have to change. I always used to think that saying was kind of funny, but it absolutely is true. And all of us have been around people who absolutely, who would see things that needed changing and yet would absolutely not do it. And why? It's because most people are not comfortable with change. But if you keep doing the same thing, we ought to know what's going to happen. You're going to go out of business. And the one thing you can always count on is change. But that leaves us two choices, as Stacy says in this thing here. You can let change happen to you, or you can make change happen. Now, unfortunately, a lot of people do the first one. They just let change happen to them. You know, a lot of times, I've seen this in our business. I've seen it in other businesses. I've seen it in other organizations, such as nonprofits and churches and things of that sort. When bad times hit, and let's say you get into bad financial problems, something, or even in families and personal life, people begin to make changes they should have made when things were good. You know, they began to cut out superfluous expenses that really, you know, they found they've had creep business, they had expense creep in this area. They found they got some inefficiency in the business in this area where they're wasting a lot of money on utilities or something like that. Because they're running a very inefficient system of some kind, or they didn't negotiate the proper rates or whatever. And they begin to make those changes. Again, changes you should have made when the business was going well. And that is the difference between someone that's successfully operating a business. They make those changes before they're forced to make them. In other words, they make the changes happen. They don't let the changes happen to them. Well, they don't have any control over that. You know, any of us that go in and look at problems in our business and we see issues in there, a lot of times it's overwhelming. And my wife and I just went through a situation of cleaning our basement. And when I first go down and look at the basement, and all of you have probably done this at one time or another, it's overwhelming, isn't it? You look down and you think, oh man, we will never get this cleaned up. And you know, and what does it make you want to do? What does it motivate you to do when you say that? It motivates you to never start. This is just too much for me. I can't do it. But what most of us have lived long enough to know the right thing to do, don't we? You just start taking it on a little at a time. Instead of looking at the entire thing, you look at some little area and you clean that area up and you clean another one up. And before you know it, you've got it pretty well cleaned up. Much of life is that way. Much of business is that way. When you look at things in your business that are not going well, that are not working for you, but it's almost overwhelming to you because it's so ingrained in your business. We'll just take a little bit of it. Take a little bit at a time, and the success will breed success. You'll become more motivated as you begin to see that getting going. You know, it may be in your company, and I'm not big on terminating employees, but it could well be that if you look around your company, you've got employees that are not doing their job. We've had it happen with us a number of times. I don't know any business that hasn't happened to. Well, you know what? You need to deal with that. And sometimes when things are going really well, you just sort of put that off. Say, well, you know, you just don't deal with it. And you know, because you're not under any financial pressure, you don't deal with it. But what's happening is you've got all kind of opportunities being lost by the fact that you've got people that are not doing their job. It's opportunity cost to you. And not only that, they may well be killing morale in your company. So you got to deal with it. And I think you should give everybody a fair chance. You bring them in, you talk to them, you give them a chance to change. But if they don't, there comes a time when you have to let people go. And you should do that before things get bad, not after they are bad. And you're going to do it probably in a much more abrupt and unkind fashion because you're going to be under a lot of pressure. The other point to make is that change by itself is not a virtue. You don't change things just to change things. You know that old saying, if it's not, if it's not broke, don't fix it kind of situation. Now, you can take that too far. Sometimes it may be working, but it needs improvements, and you need to look at that at times. But on the other hand, just come in and overturn the apple cart and make a bunch of changes, you're just going to make everybody very angry. When you make changes, people should know why you're doing it. You should have thought it out. And you need to sit down, again, this communication as a leader. You need to sit down with all your folks and say, look, we're having to make a change in the company. Here's why we're doing it. Here's why we're doing it. We look at this market, this part of the market, this part of the market, this part of the market. You know, if we don't change this over here, we're going to really face some issues over here and problems. So we're going to have to make these adjustments and changes. I need you on board with me. I need your input. I need your feedback on it. I need you to really help me make this happen. You're going to find that works a lot better than just walking in there with a memo and saying, okay, today we're changing our whole way of doing business today. We're turning everything around. Don't do that. Stacy has a great, in the end of his article, I've often thought about it. He says, how do you know when you need to make a change? Here's what he says. Sometimes it's just gut instinct, but he has three rules of thumb. If he has a number of months of data showing him that he's not on track to reach his goals, something needs to change. So that sounds almost like that would be self-explanatory, but it's not. A lot of us will sit and look at bad data and keep thinking somehow it's going to improve by itself. And I know you've done that. You look at a few bad months, you say, well, you know, we're just having a run of bad luck, so we'll just let it go and it fixes itself. Well, here's the deal. It often does not fix itself. You need to do it. He says if he finds himself complaining about the same problem three or more times, it's time to make a change. You know, if I walk through our basement, this basement's driving me crazy, you know, three or four times, well, maybe it's time I quit saying that and fix and clean the basement. And it's the same with you and your business. If you find that you are having a recurring problem in your business is driving you nuts, and you're getting angry about it, and you're getting annoyed, well, instead of getting angry and annoyed about it, fix it. Make a change and take care of the problem. The same thing with a problem employee. If you're going home at night, laying awake at night because of an employee, well, deal with the employee, and you can deal with them whatever makes the most sense. Perhaps you need to talk to them and let them know what the expectations are. Or if in a worst-case scenario, you have to terminate them. You know, I have a saying with our guys. I've told our people this a number of times that Eddie is not a policeman, and Eddie's not going to be a policeman. And if you make me be a policeman, you're not going to be here because I'm not going to be a policeman. And so it's just I try to make it a little humorous with them, but it's just a way of saying I'm not going to stand over your shoulder and watch what you do. And if I have to do that, you're not going to be here. I don't want people that I have to stand on their shoulder and watch what they do. I want people that I sort of give a task to, and I just turn loose and walk away, and they get it done. And if they need my help, they come ask me for it. Yeah, or if I don't think you know how to do it, perhaps I'll help a little bit and get some coaching there. But by and large, I want people that are motivating themselves to get the job done, and people that like working without somebody looking over their shoulder all the time. And again, his third thing is, if I'm presented with a better idea system, I at least consider making the change. We're in the process right now of completely redoing our enterprise software. It's a major undertaking. I have fought that for a long, long, long time. I do not like spending money on software. I don't like spending money on new computers. But again, after seeing some of the problems we were having and complaining about them, he finally said, okay, we've got to do that. And so we put it in motion. And now we're all very positive about what we're doing. You've been listening to Driven to Business. We're every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. I'm Eddie Mayfield, Catch the podcast on eddiemayfield.com if you missed the program today or on iTunes. See you next week.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.